It's time to turn off the lights and turn on the dark.
Chilling tales for dark nights.
Hello again, listener, and welcome back to Chilling Tales for Dark Nights. I'm your host, Steve Taylor, and tonight, we descend into a place where survival becomes fragile, where distance feels endless, and where the cold is more than a condition. It's a presence, one that creeps in quietly, numbs the senses, and waits patiently for weakness. Out there, far from help, far from warmth, the rules change, decisions narrow, time stretches, and the line between endurance and extinction grows dangerously thin. Because when the temperature drops low enough, even hope begins to freeze. Before we brave what lies ahead, however, there are a few important updates to share. The Evil Idol 2025 voice acting competition continues here at Chilling Tales for Dark Nights, with round 3 beginning soon. For updates, announcements, and further information as the competition moves forward, be sure to check out our official Chilling Tales for Dark Nights YouTube channel. While you're there, consider subscribing and enabling notifications so you don't miss what comes next. As always, you can find Chilling Tales for Dark Nights wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. If you're enjoying the show, we'd truly appreciate a 5-star rating and review. It helps more listeners find their way into the dark. For those who want more, earlier, deeper, and uninterrupted, consider becoming a Chilling Tales for Dark Nights member. Visit ChillingTalesForDarkNights.com to unlock ad-free episodes, early access, exclusive bonus content, and our complete back catalog. All for just $7.99 a month, with discounted annual plans available. And don't forget to stay connected with us on Facebook, X, Instagram, and TikTok, where we share announcements, updates, and glimpses behind the curtain. Now then, let's turn our attention to tonight's featured tale. Written by the late Frederick Pangborn, this story is a stark and unforgiving meditation on isolation, desperation, and the quiet cruelty of the natural world. It asks a chilling question. When the environment itself turns hostile, how long can the human body and spirit hold out? Tonight's performance is delivered by Nicholas Goroff, featuring Jeff Sturtevant, Eric Peabody, Paul J. McSorley, and Victoria Voss, with production by Drew Blood. So settle in, dim the lights, and listen closely. From author Frederick Pangborn, we present A Snow and Painful Death.
Are we there yet?
Asked Patty from the back seat of the van.
Soon, Patty, soon,
replied Derek, as he concentrated on the snow-packed road that was winding ahead of him. The snow had started coming down heavy soon after they left town. It was Derek's idea to have the four of them leave their cars in town and drive up to the cabin in the van. The five of them were all Minnesota natives, born and raised, but once they had chosen their designated paths in life, they went their separate ways. These yearly gatherings were the only times they could physically meet up and catch up on their lives. Derek had been the only one who decided to stay behind and help run his family's hotel out in Roseau County. It was his idea that they avert from the hotel this year and try something new by renting the isolated cabin up in the desolate, wooded outskirts of town. This way, there would be no noise complaints from the hotel guests as in the past. Mark, who sat up in the passenger seat next to Derek, turned his head as they passed a lone driveway off to their right. A red mailbox sat perched on a tilted post on the corner. Snow had already begun to collect on its top. The words Schaefer painted in faded white lettering.
I take it that's the Schaefer's place?
Asked Mark, jutting his thumb at the mailbox as they passed.
Yeah, they're the only neighbors we'll have up here for miles. The cabin's up about another half mile or so,
stated Derek. Behind them, seated in the bench seat, were Patty, Reggie, and Tanya, their luggage stacked up behind the three. Mark and Patty both attended the University of Minnesota, while Reggie took a Wall Street job in Chicago and Tanya worked for a major designer company in San Francisco. This was their fourth year of these annual reunions.
So, Derek, you're heading back up here tonight?
Asked Reggie.
Yeah.
He replied, keeping his eyes on the rising road.
I already stocked up the cabin with supplies for the weekend, and as soon as I wrap up at the hotel, I'll be back up.
I'm not getting a signal up here,
Tanya stated as she leaned between the front seats and attempted to show her cell phone to Derek.
No, you're not going to either. This whole area is a dead zone when it comes to cell service.
That blows,
she pouted as she sat back in her seat.
I'm sure you won't wither up and die without your phone for a couple of days, T,
Mark said mockingly.
Plus, all your friends are right here. Who are you going to call?
Fuck off,
she joked back with a smile. Mark stared at Tanya through the rearview mirror for a brief moment. Tanya was tall and slim. Her ample C-cups only added to her sensuality, as did her large blue eyes and full lips. Her short, layered blonde hair complementing her delicate facial features. His sexual fascinations for her had stretched back to their high school years, but he had never made his fondness of her known. Instead, Patty had approached him, making her feelings all too obvious. His cowardliness toward his true desires resulted in him and Patty becoming a couple. He threw a quick glance to Patty, who was peering out the window watching the passing landscape, hoping she had not witnessed him staring, and he too promptly turned his attention to the window.
Also, just so you all know,
Derek turned to his companions in the back seat while maintaining his view of the road.
There's no phone at the cabin. The Schaefers have a landline if anything happens, but other than that, we're on our own. Running water and electricity are all we have, besides a full liquor cabinet.
Shit! Who needs anything else?
Laughed Reggie, as he draped his arms over the woman's shoulders to either side of him and squeezed. Both responded with a scowled look. The van began to decelerate as it turned off the main road and onto a snow-covered path into the tree line. The newly fallen snow crunched under the vehicle's tires as it slowly made its way forward. After a short moment, the cabin came into sight. The log cabin-styled house was two stories. A long porch extended the length of the front of the cabin, its black shingled roof barely visible beneath the snow covering.
Here we are, ladies and gents,
announced Derek as he stopped the van and threw it into park.
Thank Christ,
Tanya exclaimed as the group proceeded to exit the van and retrieve their luggage. Mark threw the shoulder strap of his large gym bag over his shoulder and took a moment to survey his wintry surroundings. Sometimes he forgot how beautiful some of the areas of the state were. The air was silent, with the exemption of the group as they extracted their personal belongings from the van. The snow fell in thick clumps about them. A wall of towering pine trees encircled the cabin, the dense wilderness beyond dark and vast. To the right of the cabin, carved into the expanding line of pines, was a footpath, the unblemished coating of snow making its route predominantly obvious. If he wasn't mistaken, Derek had said there was a trail that led down to the Schaefer's house. They had at one point owned the lot, but had sold it years ago to eliminate the mounting medical bills that had developed due to Mr. Schaefer.
Mark, you plan on coming out of that trance anytime soon?
Said Patty from the front porch, a travel bag in each hand.
Yeah, I'm done,
he snickered as he made his way to the cabin. Patty may have not had the sexual allure of Tanya, but she was nothing to cast aside. At 5'7", she was slightly shorter than Tanya, and her athletic body gave her a shapely figure. Her long, curled brown hair reached just beyond her shoulders.
I was just taking in the scenery,
he stated, as he climbed the steps and wrapped his free arm around her waist and kissed her deeply. Together they entered the front door. Inside the main room, a stone fireplace was fixed into the wall on the right. A love seat and sofa sat around a coffee table facing the fireplace, while a dining table stood behind them toward the far wall. A small kitchen was to the left under a loft that housed the upstairs bedrooms. A chandelier made of deer antlers hung from the ceiling.
"Welcome to Shangri-La,"
shouted Derek as he threw out his arms in a welcoming manner and a widening grin. Derek resembled your typical bookworm type. Thin, not an athletic bone in his body, and the thick-framed glasses to boot.
"Sweet,"
replied Reggie as he sat his luggage down and looked about.
"You did good, Derek,"
Mark added as he took in the cabin's interior. Both women had already set their bags down, took off their coats, and were exploring.
"The bedrooms are upstairs,"
Derek said.
"The bathroom is that door at the foot of the stairs, and everything else is in plain view."
"You weren't joking about the cabinets being filled,"
stated Tanya as she stood in front of the cabinets in the kitchen, holding the upper doors open and surveying the groceries.
"Indeed, I was not, and the booze is stacked over on the counter next to the fridge. Beer is inside."
Derek began to walk backwards toward the front door. He pulled up his sleeve to expose his wristwatch.
"The time is now 2:16. I will be leaving the hotel and on my way back up at 6. If there's an emergency, there's a footpath to the side of the cabin that leads straight down to the Schaefer's house. They are aware that we're up here. So, are there any questions before I shove off?"
He was now standing at the door, his hand on the knob.
"We're good,"
called the girls as they were rummaging through the kitchen. Reggie was already carrying his bag up the stairs, getting ready to lay claim to the biggest bedroom.
"I guess not,"
said Mark, clamping a hand on Derek's shoulder.
"Come on, champ, I'll walk you out."
Thanking Derek again for his generous efforts with the cabin and paying for the supplies, Mark gave him a slap on the back and watched from the top of the porch as his friend descended the stairs and waded through the accumulating snow toward the van. He glanced out at the wilderness around him, and then to the gray sky and the countless snowflakes falling from far above. He breathed in deep, taking in the cold country air. A smile formed on his face. The thought of the festivities and antics that were about to transpire this weekend were already lifting his spirits. The sound jolted him from his blissful daydream. It sounded as if Derek had fallen against the side of the van. He stood there with his hands shoved into his coat pockets, looking at the vehicle. Derek had yet to climb inside. The front seats remained empty. His lips began to part as he was about to ask if Derek was still there when something hit the side of the van on the opposite end where he could not see. The van rocked slightly from the impact, and it was then he heard Derek cry out.
"Derek?"
he asked, softer than he intended, and took a cautious step down the porch. Suddenly, Derek was at the front of the van flailing about against the grill. It appeared as though a swarm of invisible bees were attacking him. The freezing temperature itself, though, quickly dissolved that notion. Mark took another step down, his hands emerging from the coat. He knew he should be rushing to Derek's aid, but something in the back of his head was taking notice of the situation on a whole other level and held him at bay. Now Mark observed something else. The snow about Derek was moving about like frenzied water. It moved even though it was not being disturbed. It seemed to leap up on him, clinging to his clothing, and other times it moved in a whirling tendril formation, wrapping itself around his limbs. He now fell into the deep snow, still thrashing about and starting to yell out in pain.
"Derek!"
Mark shouted from the safety of the porch stairs, daring not to move any closer. From behind him, he could hear the others rushing to the door, their footfalls loud on the wooden floor planks. Derek was still writhing in the swirling mass of snow when the others scrambled onto the porch. Mark held out both arms to signal the three of them to proceed no further. The snow was now moving over Derek and attaching itself to his exposed hands and face. It looked from a distance as if it were pushing itself into his mouth and nostrils. He choked from the blocked airways, and wisps of snow spewed from his mouth only to fly back in.
Oh my God!
Shouted one of the girls, and Mark felt Reggie try to push by him. Mark turned and grabbed the front of his shirt with both hands.
Don't!
He hissed between clenched teeth. Reggie stared back with his mouth agape.
What's happening to him?
Patty yelled in a voice near panic. No one answered. Instead, they all watched as Derek's thrashing limbs began to cease its wild movements and began to go limp. His back, still twisted and arched from overwhelming pain, seemed to settle into the snow, which was now moving over him like the coming of the tide, washing over him until he was barely visible beneath the blinding whiteness. Once again, the air became deathly silent, like some underground crypt. Only the falling snow showing any sign of life. Behind the two men, the girls' sobs were even hushed as they held on to each other.
What just happened?
Whispered Reggie.
I don't know, but we need to get back inside,
replied Mark in an equally hushed voice. Without any coaxing or resistance, the four of them slowly moved backward into the cabin. The snow still moving by some unseen force over Derek's still body like choppy waves on a lake. Only his bent leg and a partial arm remained protruding from the cold white. Once inside the cabin, the door was closed and locked. The four of them made their way to the front windows and huddled between the long curtains.
What just happened out there?
A sobbing Tanya from the far window asked.
I don't know,
he answered, not taking his gaze from the glass.
What do you mean you don't know? You were standing right there,
said Reggie next to him at the same window. He too, not averting his gaze. Mark wet his arid lips with his tongue and swallowed, his mouth becoming increasingly dry.
I don't know. He was about to get in the van and then all of a sudden started running around like he was being stung by wasps or something.
Wasps?
Replied Reggie with a look of doubt.
Come on. There aren't any wasps out here this time of year.
It was like the snow was alive. Did you see how it moved? Like it was attacking him.
Patty quietly added.
That's even more ridiculous than wasps,
Reggie shot back.
Well, whatever just happened, I say we sit tight for a moment.
Mark somberly spoke.
At least until we figure something out.
Reggie stepped back from the window.
How are we going to get out of here if Derek has the keys to the van?
He's right,
Tanya now added.
How are we going to leave?
Someone needs to go out there and get the keys off him,
Reggie said.
Well, I'm not going out there.
Patty was now stepping away from the window, waving off the notion. Mark sighed and continued looking outside.
I'll go out, but let's just wait for a while and see if anything else happens.
Reggie and Patty silently returned to their positions at the windows. Together, the four of them waited in quietude, watching Derek's exposed limbs jutting out of the frozen whiteness overlaying him. The snow continued to fall in a heavy rain of thick, crystallized flakes, showing no signs of waning anytime soon. After 15 minutes, Mark finally spoke.
I haven't seen anything moving out there.
He sat up from the window.
Anyone else see anything?
The three all gave negative replies as they too came away from the glass and stood in a circle facing each other.
All right. I'm gonna go out there and check his coat pockets for the keys.
Mark began as he commenced to zipping up his coat.
When I get them, I'm gonna start up the van. Once it starts, I want the rest of you to run out and get in. Any questions?
The women shook their heads. Reggie, however, was walking to the sofa and grabbing his own coat that was draped over the back and began to don it.
I'm going with you, just in case something kicks off like with Derek.
Okay, fine,
replied Mark after a short pause. Reggie was probably right. If something did start up like before, it may be in his best interest to have someone with him.
You two get your coats on and stand by. When that van starts, come out,
ordered Mark as he walked past the women and walked to the door with Reggie in tow. Mark stopped at the door and placed his hand on the knob. He looked back at Reggie, who nodded that he was ready.
Keep the door closed behind us until it's time to leave,
said Mark, not looking back as he then opened the door and stepped out onto the porch. Outside, the air was still and bitter cold. The two stepped out onto the porch and the door closed behind them. They looked around the surrounding area in front of the cabin. All had not changed, silent and cold. If there was something waiting in the snow for them, it remained still and hidden. As if on cue, the two both quietly made their way down the porch stairs and into the deep snow. The soft, powdery snow was a good 10 inches high as they waded through it. Derek laid about 30 feet away. As they waded closer, Mark noticed the partially uncovered arm and how pale and frail the gnarled hand looked. It wasn't until he was standing atop the body that he made the horrific discovery. The bare hand appeared pale and frail because it was all bare bone. A skeletal hand and wrist poked from the coat's blue sleeve. He stopped and gasped.
What the fuck?
Whispered Reggie as he stood at his side looking down upon the arm. Without answering, Mark knelt down and began uncovering the body from the snow with his hands, brushing away the white flakes and revealing more of the body underneath. Reggie now knelt and assisted in the unearthing of their friend. It wasn't until the grinning skull was visible that the two flinched and moved back. The skull had been completely stripped of its soft tissue. Flesh, hair, cartilage, eyes, all cleanly removed without a trace of violence or gore, leaving only a grinning specter where Derek's face had been. Not a single speck of blood stained the virgin snow surrounding the scene.
What the fuck am I looking at? This is impossible.
Reggie's face twisted in disbelief. Mark felt his own breath becoming rapid.
I have no idea.
He stammered as he began to run his hands into the coat's pockets.
What are you doing?
Asked Reggie.
We need those keys, Reg. We need to get out of here before whatever did this comes back.
Fuck!
Reggie hissed and began to aid in the search. Their fingertips ached with pain from the biting cold as they rifled through the coat and then the pant pockets. The feeling of the skeleton inside the clothing as they poked and prodded for the keys was causing both men to grimace. As bewildering and grotesque as the situation at hand had become, ignoring the sensation of bone where flesh should be was the pinnacle.
They're not here,
Reddy said. He backed away and cupped his hands to his mouth, filling them with hot breath. His eyes darting across the landscape, searching for any threat.
They have to be. Help me.
Reddy stood up, his sandy brown hair covered in snowy flakes.
They're not on him.
He moved to the driver's side of the van and looked to the keyhole of the door lock. Nothing. Opening the door, he climbed in and started tearing through the van's inside compartment. He felt something clasp onto his ankle as it dangled from out of the open door. He jerked it in and glared back at Mark standing by the door.
Are you fucking crazy? After that shit over there, you're sneaking up and grabbing on me?
I'm sorry.
Mark's face a worried mask.
The keys aren't on him. Any luck?
Nothing.
Shit. He must have dropped them when he was attacked. They could be anywhere in the snow.
He stepped back and started looking to the snow for any indications the fallen keys may have produced in the snow's smooth surface, but even if the keys had punctured the snow and left a sign, it was long filled in by the descending flakes.
Fuck this.
Reggie started climbing from the van.
Let's go back in and figure out something. I'm fucking cold.
Closing the driver's door, the two trudged back to the cabin, giving Derek's remains a wide berth.
Reg, don't mention anything about Derek to the girls. That's the last thing they need to hear right now.
Yeah, sure.
As they climbed the porch steps, the front door opened, the girls' faces peering from around the edge.
What happened? Did you find the keys?
Asked Patty, closing the door behind the two men as they entered.
No,
replied Reggie, as he passed by and made his way to the kitchen.
He must have dropped them when he was attacked.
So, what does that mean?
Asked Tanya.
it means we're fucked. That's what that means.
Reddy's tone taking on a sour note as he began to sort through the liquor bottles on the counter.
It means,
corrected Mark as he flopped down in the love seat and ran his fingers through his wavy brown hair,
that the van is not our only means out of here.
Patty moved to him and sat down next to him, placing her hand on his knee.
What do you mean?
It means that we need to get down to the Schaefer's house and use their phone and, if need be, their car.
He leaned back, deep into the cushions.
There's a trail next to the cabin that leads straight to their place.
I'm not walking all the way over there. Not after what I saw. Not me, brother,
exclaimed Reggie from the kitchen as he poured himself a rock glass of Jack Daniels.
What did you see? What was out there?
Inquired Tanya as she walked toward the kitchen to Reggie.
Nothing,
answered Mark.
Nothing. I'll go. If the rest of you want to wait here, I don't have an issue with that. But besides sitting here waiting for someone to come along, we're fresh out of options.
With a heavy sigh, Mark lifted himself from the love seat and walked into the kitchen. Pulling a glass from the cabinet, he began to pour the whiskey and turned to the girls.
I'll call for the police and see if I can get a ride back up here once I get over there.
He drank deeply from the glass and winced as the burning alcohol washed down his throat.
Well, I'm not staying here. I'm going with you,
Tanya stated as she zipped up the front of her pink coat and stood ready. Patty stayed seated and slowly began to remove her coat.
I can't go. I don't want to go out there.
Her voice small and deflated.
Smart girl,
shot Reggie as he poured another drink. Mark threw Reggie a glance and placed his empty glass in the sink. Walking to Patty, he took a knee in front of her and held her hands in his.
It's okay. It's all good. We'll have help up here soon. Just stay put and keep the door closed.
She smiled and ran her fingers through his hair.
All right then.
Mark stood up and made his way to the door, Tanya trotting behind.
It should take us about 20 minutes or so to get down to the house. You sure you want to go?
He turned to Tanya, who nodded vigorously. He nodded and returned and opened the door. A rush of cold air flowed in the cabin's warm confines. A wind was starting up outside. Guiding Tanya out the door first, he turned to his two remaining friends.
Reg, hold down the fort. Keep her safe.
Reggie, still leaning on the kitchen counter, held up his third filled glass in a toast.
Will do. Godspeed, my friend.
Then poured the drink into his mouth. Patty simply smiled again from where she sat and looked on with sorrowful brown eyes. With that, Mark closed the door behind him and pulled his collar up.
Come on,
he said, and the two made their way off the porch and across the yard in the direction of the trail. They constantly glanced about their surroundings, searching for anything that would raise any feeling of suspicion. Behind them, Mark looked back at the trail they were blazing through the smooth, untouched snow. Hopefully, whatever killed Derek was not able to follow such an obvious indication of their whereabouts. As they left the confines of the cabin's perimeter and made their way into the thickets and trees, Tanya moved closer and wrapped her arms around his. The forest was absent of sound as they moved onward. On occasion, the wind would pick up and shake the branches of the surrounding trees and kick up a wall of powdery white mist into their faces. The moment almost seemed surreal. Aside from what had happened to Derek, it could be as if the two were in their own world, void of danger. Just the two of them, as Mark had imagined at times. He and Tanya, alone in a desolate winter wonderland. Mark's realm of a faraway blissful encounter with Tanya was ripped back to reality when she stopped walking, her hands gripping his arm tightly. He looked up to see in the distance ahead the rusted hulk of a derelict car under a thick coating of snow. They must have already reached the Schaefer's house.
It's okay. I think we're here.
He spoke softly as he began to move forward. They had indeed reached the property of the Schaefer house. The trail ended at the far end of their backyard, Piles of various items, from old tires to equipment that had long expired its usefulness, lay covered by snow-settled tarps. They cautiously made their way into the yard toward a worn two-story house set about 50 yards ahead. A blue station wagon, as worn as the house, was parked nearby. As they passed another pile of rubbish, the wind kicked up again and the door slammed to their left. They froze in their tracks and threw a quick, fearful glance toward the noise. A large shed, held together by warped wooden planks that peered from the torn pieces of black tar paper that acted as some type of siding, was nestled near the yard's edge. The heavy door to the shed slapped against the shed's side as another gust of wind threw it open. The falling snow, along with the wind-blown drifts, had constructed a barrier that kept the door from closing. It would attempt to close itself only to meet the snow mound, then the wind would toss it open again.
That scared the fuck out of me,
Tanya said as she loosened her grip on his arm.
You and me both. Stay here for a second. I want to see something.
He pried her hands from him and walked toward the shed. As he neared the open door, he noticed something half buried in the drift, propped up in the doorway. He gradually crept closer, moving to the doorway until he witnessed what was now becoming a grim yet familiar scene. Leaning up in the door jamb, half buried under the accumulating snow, were the skeletal remains of someone who had been dressed in a thick faded denim coat with a shielding liner and collar. Its head cocked to the side and arms hanging loosely upon the ground. The lower half had been covered by snow as the upper portion had remained mostly inside the shed. Like Derek, the bones had been picked clean. Not a trace of flesh or a sinew of muscle. The skull stared into the shed, its jaw hanging open, revealing the partial dentures that remained behind.
What is it?
Tanya called in a loud, whispered voice as she began to move forward. Mark held up his hand to cease her movement and shook his head.
Stay there.
Looking past the skeleton, who was presumably Mr. Schaefer, Mark peered into the shed. A single-lit bulb that dangled from the ceiling swayed in the wind, revealing a workbench against the far wall. Carefully, Mark stepped over the remains and made his way into the shed. Apparently, Mr. Schaefer had been out here working on something when he confronted the same fate as Derek, and with no difference of outcome. Whatever this unseen force was, hopefully a clue to its motives or origin might be revealed here at the property.
Oh my God!
Shrieked Tanya. She had come up behind him and was gasping at the sight of the skeleton, her hands covering her mouth.
I told you to stay where you were.
He reached out, grabbing her by the arm, pulling her away and toward him.
Don't look at it.
What happened to him?
Tanya cried as she buried her face into his coat.
I don't know.
He held her close and moved into the shed.
Mr. Schaefer, I think.
The inside of the shed housed an old tractor resting under a battered tarp. Boxes, more rusted equipment in various stages of disrepair, and other junk debris filled the shed from floor to the rafters. Atop the workbench, in front of him, was a peculiar display set out on its surface. Some type of hollowed-out stone that had been split in half rested next to a chisel and mallet. Mark moved closer. Tanya lifted her tear-streaked face from the pocket of his shoulder and observed as well. The stone was roughly spherical in shape and about the same diameter as a bowling ball. The stone's features were of a black, porous volcanic rock. Evidently, Schaefer had used the chisel and mallet to split the stone, but to what means? Mark moved up to the desk and grasped the stone with his hands. Lifting it up for closer observation, he found the stone to be lighter than it appeared. The center of the stone was indeed hollowed out, but naturally, not by the chisel.
It looks like one of those space rocks. You know,
It was Tanya who added a missing piece to the puzzle.
meteorite.
Mark finished. He examined the inside of the stone closer. Numerous small specks of white were scattered inside its core. Raising the stone even higher to his face, he poked his finger inside and scooped one of the specks onto his fingertip. The tiny speck was not a piece of the stone, but a small bug. The minuscule insect, no bigger than an ant, could easily fit onto the surface of his thumbnail. It resembled a miniature beetle. Multiple legs, smooth exoskeleton, and most of all, massive mandibles.
No fucking way,
Mark said, more to himself out loud as he lowered the rock back onto the table.
What? What is it?
Tanya asked, but Mark simply stared straight ahead as if in a trance, his mind suddenly penetrating the perplexing mystery that plagued them. It was far-fetched, but if laid out and configured just the right way, the evidence could make sense. Mark flicked the insect from his hand. Turning to Tanya, he turned her to face him, his hands on her arm.
This is just a stab in the dark, but what if this rock is some sort of meteorite from somewhere in space? It lands somewhere nearby, and Schaefer discovers it and brings it back here. For whatever reason, he breaks it in half, not knowing that it's hollow or what it may contain. Once broken, these insects are released. These things have been encased in that meteor for God knows how long. And once freed, they feed on the first thing that's edible. They're so small and white that they blend right into the snow virtually unseen. That is, until they come upon their next meal.
His voice trailed off as he looked over his shoulder to the snow falling thickly onto the wintry surroundings outside. He stepped away and stood in the doorframe of the shed, looking down at the skeleton laying at his feet, then out into the snowfall.
Mark, you don't really believe that, do you? Bugs from outer space?
Tanya asked from behind him.
Unless you have a better explanation of all this, then yes, I do.
What about Derek?
It was her voice that was now trailing off.
The same thing. We didn't want to tell you to.
You think those little bugs did that? How is that possible?
I don't know.
Mark was shaking his head.
A few? No, but what if thousands came out of that rock? Maybe hundreds of thousands.
Oh, God. So what are we going to do?
He turned back to face her.
We're going to use their phones and call for help. Then take that car out back there up to the cabin and get the others, okay?
She nodded and took his hand in hers.
Okay. Let's go see if Mrs. Schaefer is still around and get inside and out of the snow.
Leading her by the hand, they stepped over the late Mr. Schaefer and walked along the side of the house to the front door. The snow showed no signs of letting up, and snowdrifts from the constant winds had made their way up high along the side of the house, gradually creeping up to meet the first floor windows. They trudged around the side of the house, avoiding the snowdrift depths, yet the snow was well up to their shins by now. When they rounded the corner of the house near the station wagon, they were met with another scene of abnormality but occurring familiarity. Tracks leading to the vehicle from the cement steps of the front door were barely visible as the falling snow was filling them as they watched. Their eyes followed the snow-filled path backwards from vehicle to house to find the skeletal remains of Mrs. Schaefer, her body laid out upon the stone stairs, a bone arm outstretched from her coat sleeve toward the screen door to the house. Her house coat all but covered in the frosted paleness of snow. Like the others, her bones picked clean.
Jesus,
he remarked as he quickly surveyed the scene.
It looks like she tried to go for the car, but decided to get back into the house. She almost made it. Maybe she tried to run for help and was attacked. Decided to try and make it back into the house?
Look,
she declared as she pointed to the car.
The keys are still in the door.
Mark squinted his eye, and sure enough, a set of keys were dangling from the door lock. The phone would have to wait when the vehicle was within reach at this very moment. He would pick up Patty and Reggie and head straight into town. They would relay their story to the authorities then.
Come on, get in,
he said as he moved forward, and Tanya shuffled around to the passenger side. He had reached the vehicle first and was unlocking the doors before Tanya had made it to her side. He paused for a brief moment and watched her legs pumping as she moved through the deep snow in her tight, faded jeans. Out of all the ill-suited times to relish in a sexual fantasy, this window presented itself. He envisioned her bare, firm, tanned legs wrapped around his hips. If only they were together in a place far from here. He felt blood flowing into his organ as she waited and looked into his eyes, waiting for him to unlock the passenger door. Still locking eyes, he opened the door as it squealed on its dry hinges. His fingers fumbled at the door's armrest to unlock her door when the snow came alive. Like a living blanket of wintry silverness, the snow rose up behind her. His mouth opened in an attempt to shout out a dire warning, but the swarm had already wrapped around her and began its course of action. As with Derek, it instantly covered her exposed flesh and making its way under her clothing. She screamed as the tiny insects began to cling onto her skin and start to burrow inward. Thousands of diminutive bodies and mouths working as one as they each tore into the soft meat and pushed forward. Tanya's pounding on the passenger side window reverberating inside the closed confines of the vehicle. He watched in a fixed visualization as Tanya thrashed about against the far door. Her arms flailed as Derek's had, swatting at the air itself and scratching at her face as the insects pushed into the orifices that presented themselves. Biting, consuming, moving forward, biting, consuming, moving forward. The process repeating itself at such a rapid pace that death was imminent once they had entered the inner tissue of the intended victim. Tanya's face was pushed up against the passenger side window as she continued to pound on the car. Her facial tissue seemed to bubble up beneath the white swarm as it dissolved before her eyes. Her eyelids vanished, presenting only the bulging, lidless orbs. Her lips melted away, exposing the bare teeth hidden beneath. The cartilage from her nose and ears disintegrating as the heavenly beauty of her face fell away into a grotesque death's head, and her body fell away from the window and collapsed into the mounting snow. He sat gripping the steering wheel, staring straight ahead through the windshield, too paralyzed to act as Tanya continued thrashing about in the snow, her arms and legs striking the side of the car in a rapid series of bangs as she went into her final death throes. Soon, the strikes slowed their rhythm and then ceased. The inside of the car was silent. He wasn't aware how long he sat there alone, listening to wind whip against the car, the warmth of his breath covering the windshield with a film of condensation. The images of Tanya's face melting away, replaying themselves in his mind. Then there was the thought of the insects making their way into the car. He feared any movement from him would reveal his location, and they would penetrate the vehicle through the countless opening that led to its interior. So, he sat motionless. It wasn't until he found himself beginning to shiver and the skin of his bare hands and face starting to sting from the cold that he emerged from the cocoon of his mental sanctuary. He looked around him. The windshield and both front windows were obscured and fog up. His nose had been running, and he was now finally noticing. He sniffled and wiped the wet mucus from his upper lip with the back of his hand.
Gotta get Reg and Patty,
he spoke to himself as he slid the key into the ignition. He held his breath and turned the key, the engine winding in protest as it tried to draw power from a battery that was long overdue to be replaced and being subjected to the harsh cold. He closed his eyes.
Not now. Not now,
he mentally repeated, trying to will the engine to life. It was then the engine awakened. He laughed out loud. Using his forearm, he wiped the window next to him clear of the condensation and put the station wagon in reverse. He was about to test his theory on them entering the car and began backing out away from the house immediately. He winced as the car rolled over Tanya's remains and her bones broke and snapped under the vehicle's weight as it reversed. The image of her deteriorating face pressed against the window flashed through his mind. Shaking his head, he brushed away the picture and concentrated on directing the car. Thankfully, the Schaefers had at one point recently decided to shovel out their driveway. The car had only a few inches to navigate through as it carefully made its way backwards to the street. Once he was on the road, Mark turned the defrosters on high and began accelerating back up towards the cabin. The station wagon fishtailed as he made his way up the snow-encrusted road. As urgent as this was, he tried to maintain the vehicle's speed. To spin out of control and crash now would have made his entire trip pointless, especially in Tanya's case. Something positive had to result from what had happened back at the house. The windshield was finally beginning to clear as he neared the cabin. The rush of warm air felt good as it made the glass visible again and redirected itself onto his face. Within minutes, the driveway to the cabin came into view, and he attempted to carefully slow the car down as he turned in. The back end slid regardless, forcibly hitting a mound of snow, but he continued gathering speed again. The cabin soon came into view, and instantly he began laying on the horn in quick bursts. He prayed that they were ready to go when he pulled the station wagon up as close as he could to the front porch. After what he had seen during Tanya's last moments, he'd be damned if he was leaving the safety of the vehicle.
"Come on, goddammit! Come on!"
he yelled as he continued on the horn. Suddenly, the door swung open with Patty standing ready in the doorway, her coat, scarf, and a wool hat all in place. There was no sign of Reggie as of yet.
"Patty, let's go!"
he yelled as he waved her into the vehicle.
"Come on!"
She stood frozen. The frightened expression on her face as she looked about frantically increased the anger that was swelling in Mark as he started slamming his hand on the passenger seat next to him.
"What the fuck? Let's go!"
He hit the switch on the door's armrest, cracking the passenger side window a couple of inches.
"Patty, let's go!"
he yelled again and laid on the horn. Perhaps she was able to hear him now that the window was slightly opened, or the horn blasts finally penetrated the fear that prohibited her from venturing out onto the porch, whichever it happened to be. She quickly scurried across the porch and down the stairs to the car. As she was descending the stairs, Reggie appeared in the doorway, trying to don his coat as he staggered, the near-empty bottle of whiskey clutched in his hand. Patty fumbled with the door handle to the car as Mark threw his gaze into the rearview mirror. In the near distance across the property, near the area where he and Tanya entered the trail, a gust of wind was blowing a wave of flurried snow in their direction. The snow had an all-too-familiar odd quality and motion about it. Mark was no longer a stranger to this type of snow. A snow mixed with death. He leaned over and opened the door for Patty from the inside, and she started to climb in. Reggie was making his way drunkenly onto the porch, his coat donned but unzipped as he threw his arms up.
"Bro, where the fuck were you?"
he shouted in a slurred voice. Patty was already in the car and was closing the door behind when Reggie started making his way to the steps. Mark threw the mirror another glance. The wall of white was closing the distance rapidly.
"Are you fucking kidding me?"
Mark said in disbelief as he watched Reggie haphazardly making his way down the steps using the handrail for support. Mark could hear him muttering incoherently to himself as he climbed down. Reggie met the door head on as he tripped and fell into it. He cursed out loud and looked over his left shoulder at the approaching snow, his face suddenly blanketed by fear as he knew what was approaching. In the comforts of the cabin, he was able to wash the image of Derek's skeleton laying in the snow from his mind by glass after glass of Jack Daniels, but now it was all coming back to him as hard as a sobering mule kick. Dropping the bottle, he too started inaccurately trying to grasp the door handle to the back seat. The wave was almost upon him.
Come on, Reg!
Yelled Mark. Finally unlatching the door, Reggie swung it open and was climbing into the back seat, head first, when the snow met him. At first, nothing seemed to happen. The snow fell onto the back of his legs, clinging to his jeans. Unseen by the group, though, the insects had already found their way up his pant legs and were beginning to feast upon his calves and working their way savagely throughout the rest of his legs. It was then that Reggie started to scream.
Help me get him in!
Mark shouted to Patty as he reached back with his right arm and grabbed a fistful of Reggie's coat. Patty turned and leaned over her seat, pulling him in as Mark threw the car into drive and gunned the engine. The station wagon lurched forward and instantly began to fishtail on the slick, snowy surface. In the back, Reggie flailed and screamed. The car spun, and with the momentum, he slid across the bench seats further into the car with Patty's assistance. Mark had released his hold on Reggie and concentrated on controlling the car as it slid again and clashed against Derek's van. The impact managed to close the back door with a slam. He cut the wheel and tried to regain his composure. This is exactly what he didn't want to happen. The car needed to stay mobile at all costs, but smashing it up would only increase the chances of rendering the old car undrivable. Reggie's screams had dropped to loud, agonizing moans as he tossed back and forth on the seat.
Jesus! Mark, he's bleeding!
Cried Patty as she tried to restrain him.
I'm a little busy right now. Deal with it!
Mark shot back as the vehicle stabilized and was heading back to the main road, its speed decreasing down to a controllable rate. Blood was soaking through Reggie's jeans and pouring over the seats and collecting in pools on the floor. Patty had her scarf off and attempted to fasten a makeshift tourniquet to his twitching legs. The station wagon turned out of the driveway and onto the main road when Patty sat back in her seat.
His pants are soaked through with blood. Mark, what's happening?
Her voice defeated and filled with despair.
And where is Tanya?
Mark sighed heavily as he steered the car.
Tanya didn't make it.
What do you mean, didn't make it?
He could feel her stare.
She's dead, Patty, okay? Just like Derek. Just like the Schaefers.
What? How? What is going on?
Her voice beginning to rise.
They're all dead.
He stated, trying to restrain the tension he felt building.
You saw what happened. Well, Reg is lucky compared to the others. We made it to the Schaefer house and found that Mr. Schaefer had found some rock or meteorite. He broke it open and released these things, these bugs. They're white like the snow, so they're practically invisible in it.
Patty was shifting in her seat, facing him now.
Bugs? Bugs did this? How?
Patty, I don't know. The only thing I can guess is that wherever they came from is cold like this. That's why they can survive in these temperatures. I'm also guessing they're breeding like crazy since they seem to be all over the place. Again, I don't know. I'm just guessing all this.
Patty sat in silence, staring out of the window in front of her now. Everything that had happened until now was still trying to be absorbed into her head. Too much was happening, too fast, and the reasoning behind it all was just too baffling to be accepted. Though her eyes had seen what was transpiring around her, her mind simply could not keep up. Mark was keeping the station wagon at a steady 35 miles per hour as he neared the outskirts of town. The interior was warming up nicely. He threw a glance at the gas gauge, just under a quarter tank, more than enough to get into town. Once there, he would head straight for the police station. From there, an ambulance could be summoned for Reggie. Speaking of Reg, Mark noticed that his groans of pain had subsided in volume to more of a labored breathing. He was most likely in shock at this point. As the road came up onto a hill, Mark glanced at Patty. Still, she sat staring out into the falling snow outside the windshield in a state of mental impairment. Her mouth hung slightly open. All her questions had been answered, and yet her mind still refused to accept what was taking place around her. It seemed to simply shut down temporarily, as if it struggled to assess the information. Only when her eyes suddenly widened and she stiffened up in her seat did she turn his attention back to the road. By then, it was too late. The station wagon came up over the hill and straight into a woman flailing and staggering in the road. The car struck her dead on, knocking her across the hood and against the windshield. A cloud of snow and the white insects flew from her as she sailed upward from the impact. The windshield spiderwebbed from the blow, and the woman soared over the car, landing in the road behind them. Instinctively, Mark slammed on the brakes and the car spun out of control. The tail end of the wagon swung forcefully in a 180, sending it slamming against a red car parked alongside the road. The vehicles collided with a clash of metal against metal. Patty was thrown violently against the passenger door, her head smashing the door window. Mark's grip on the steering wheel broke free, sending his body sliding across the seat forcefully into Patty, who slammed into the door harder than intended. The red hatchback was knocked into a ditch at the road's edge, with the station wagon sliding partially in alongside of it, facing the opposite direction. A moment of silence fell upon the accident scene. The hatchback lay buried deep into the ditch, practically on its side, with the station wagon laying against it on an angle. Both vehicles clearly weren't going anywhere without the assistance of some passing tow truck, which was very unlikely. Mark stirred. Stars danced before his eyes as he became aware of his position, which was atop Patty. He vaguely recalled his head striking hers on impact, thus his pulsating headache. Reaching for the steering wheel, he proceeded to pull himself up toward the driver's side door and off of her. Once he had managed to steady himself, he looked down at Patty. The window to her door was shattered. Hundreds of tiny glass fragments covered her hat and coat. She laid against the door, unconscious, her head hanging loosely through the opening where the glass had been. A trickle of blood was running down the side of her face. He was reaching down to grab her when he glimpsed into the red hatchback beneath their car. From where he was positioned, he could see down into its front seats. Laying in a form of twisted proportions, yet still buckled in the passenger seat, were the skeletal remains of what appeared to have once been a young girl. Her pink and white snow jacket was the only indication of the gender, her skull peering from under the coat's hood, her empty eye sockets staring into the snow. Mark figured the woman must have pulled over and, for reasons unknown, exited her vehicle. The insects must have been on them before they knew what hit them. Christ, the kid was still buckled up in her seat. While under attack, the mother wandered into the middle of the road. Perhaps by hitting her, he had done her a favor and spared her from a most vile and agonizing form of death. Either way, Patty didn't need to see the little girl when she came to. He slid back down the seat toward her and gently lifted her from the open window and positioned himself to where she sat on his lap and rested upon him. Cradling her, he tenderly moved her hair from her face and brushed off the shards of glass from her hat and coat. Looking over his shoulder, he saw Reggie laying in a tangled mess and upside down against the passenger door in the back seat, his face only a few feet from him, staring through dead open eyes, his mouth agape with a strand of blood hanging from the corner. Then there were the bare leg bones of his tibia and fibula jutting out of his pant legs, his work boots dangling from their ends. The insects ate enough to bleed him out. The sun was beginning its descent from behind the gray sky. The temperature was starting to drop also. Perhaps if he could start up the engine, he could at least get the heat going. He reached up, trying not to move Patty, and turned the keys that were still hanging from the ignition. On the first partial turn, the engine light came on in the dash, but when fully turned, only a rapid clicking came from the aged, problematic battery. The car was dead in the water. The snow had minimized to a light dusting, but the bitter wind continued to howl. As the snow played in patterns against the spiderwebbed windshield, Mark thought he could make out anomalies in them. Were the bugs outside the vehicles at this very moment, waiting for them to climb from the wreckage and expose themselves to the hungry swarm? He was not about to venture out and see. No, he would wait them out. If the woman and her daughter were on the road when someone else would be passing by too, Patty moaned and shifted on his lap, her body shivering from the dropping temperature. The scenario in which he found himself in was unfolding into a no-win situation. Behind door number one awaited the swarm that would eat you to the bone in a matter of minutes. No, we weren't going that route, he thought. And behind door number two was a matter of possibly dying of exposure in the freezing temperatures that continued to drop. He reached up again and turned the radio in the dashboard on. Surprisingly, a station came on in crystal clear audio. He wrapped his arms around Patty and buried his face in her neck for warmth. Door number two it was. At least they would have some type of entertainment during the night until someone came along or the battery died.
With the market at a 200-point low,
the voice from the radio announced.
And for the weekend forecast, we're looking at below-freezing temperatures throughout the weekend, well into the teens and possibly single digits. This is the type of weekend you don't want to be out in, believe me. As we stated earlier, that storm will be making its way down from Canada sometime late tonight, and we're looking at a good 10 to 12 inches of snow depending on where you live. So turn up that heat and curl up on that couch. Maybe get some binge watching in on those television series you've been meaning to watch. We'll return with the news and weather again at half past the hour. Now, back to the music with the classic from Martha and the Vandellas, Nowhere to Run.
Mark could only smile at the irony of the song. Then he thought of the rude awakening the town would have when the people would emerge from their homes tomorrow morning, start shoveling the snow.
That was A Snow and Painful Death, written by Frederick Pangborn and performed by Nicholas Goroff, with featured performances by Jeff Sturtevant, Eric Peabody, Paul J. McSorley, and Victoria Voss. And production by Drew Blood. It's a story about vulnerability, about how quickly control slips away when the world offers no shelter, about how nature doesn't need malice to destroy us. It only needs time and cold. Before we close tonight's episode, we'd like to take a moment to remember the author behind this powerful work. Frederick Pangborn passed away on September 23, 2023, leaving behind a legacy of sharp, unsettling storytelling and a life well lived beyond the page. Fred spent his career in corrections law enforcement, eventually retiring and relocating to Florida, where he embraced a well-earned new chapter. In his spare time, he wrote short horror fiction, often with a playful edge, and saw many of his stories published. Those who knew Fred know that he had a habit of writing his friends into his work, immortalizing them in ways that were sometimes chilling, sometimes humorous, but always heartfelt. Fred was a fun, generous, and deeply genuine person. He will be missed by all who knew him. Much love on your next journey, Mr. Pangborn. You were a blessed talent, and everyone who had the privilege of knowing you was fortunate to have shared time with you. If you enjoyed tonight's episode, please remember to follow the show and leave us a 5-star rating and review on your podcast platform of choice. If you'd like to experience more stories like this one, you'll find a vast and ever-growing library waiting for you here on Chilling Tales for Dark Nights, as well as over at our horror fiction website, creepypastastories.com. For updates on Evil Idol 2025, including news as Round 3 approaches, be sure to check the Chilling Tales for Dark Nights YouTube channel and subscribe for further announcements. For ad-free listening, early access, exclusive bonus episodes, and our complete archive, visit ChillingTalesForDarkNights.com and become a member today for just $7.99 a month, with discounted annual options available. And stay connected with us on Facebook, X, Instagram, and TikTok, where the darkness never truly sleeps. And now, listener, our evening together draws to a close. You've been listening to Chilling Tales for Dark Nights. Until next time, I'm your host, Steve Taylor, reminding you to turn off the lights and turn on the dark. Sweet dreams, listeners. Sweet dreams.